Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Above and Beyond by T.O. Fallon, narrated by Vanessa Daniels. Chapter 1. 5 months, 2 weeks, 3 days. Port Authority K-9 Sergeant Jamie Pataglio, a.k.a. Jimmy Santoro, a.k.a. Inmate Number 22A5140, had counted off every godforsaken day he'd been here, inside the walls of Sing Sing Correctional Facility. Getting locked up had been easy. All it had taken was an anonymous call to the police that he'd been carrying a concealed, unlicensed handgun. If things went as planned today, he'd be walking out through the gates in 2 weeks. If things went to shit, they'd be hauling him out in a body bag. Jamie and the other prisoners waited for the guard to open the heavy iron gate that led to the yard, the outdoor recreation space where they were permitted to blow off steam for a couple precious hours each day. After a loud buzz, followed by a clunk, the gate squealed in protest as it slid open. Jamie and his neighbors from cell block A squinted and shielded their eyes from the blaring sun. Early June in Ossining was already hotter than the muzzle of his service weapon after shooting off 1,000 rounds. Sing Sing, otherwise known as the Big House, was what Batman had been referring to when he told the Penguin, the Joker, and all the other criminals he and Robin busted that they were going up the river. Jamie followed the other prisoners outside. He drew in a breath of fresh air, enjoying it while he could, and welcoming the day he no longer had to suck in the stench of the prison. The rank, stale air, thick with the smells of body odor, urine, and God knew what else, stuck to his skin like a layer of crud he could never wash off. He walked farther down the line of tables, studying the grass, then stopped to retie his sneaker. With his head bent down, he lifted his gaze, methodically searching the yard for his target, Tony Mancuso. Mancuso was the sole reason he was here. Jamie sat at one of the picnic tables. Casual and disinterested was the look he was going for. Inside, he was coiled tighter than a barbed wire fence. Rubber balls pounded on the handball court. Metal clanged from the iron pile, the weight area. Jamie had never understood the rationale behind allowing prisoners to bulk up and become strong enough to overpower the guards. Prison bureaucracy at its finest. And for the last 6 months, he'd taken full advantage of it. He'd never been fitter, leaner, and stronger in his entire life. All because of what was about to go down, here in this yard, soon. Sweat dampened his t-shirt and trickled down between his shoulder blades. Knowing his target liked to hold court every day as if he were the King of England, he kept searching. Sitting at another table, 100 feet away, was a group of men. Tony Mancuso's boys, Nikki Nails Bonanno, Polly Nuts Aiello, and Sammy Sneakers DeChico. Jamie strummed his fingers on the table. What he'd agreed to was risky as hell. With his dad's life hanging in the balance, he had no choice. Another inmate strolled over and sat next to Jamie.
"Aren't you hot with that beard?" David asked. "They're gonna make you trim it. Summer's here. Why not shave it off?"
Jamie grunted, then ran a hand down his beard.
"You're probably right."
For about a nanosecond. To cover his ass, and in case the FBI screwed up, Jamie had grown his beard right up to the prison limit, 1 inch. Before arriving at Sing Sing, he and Special Agent Jenkins had pored through the files on all the current inmates, searching for anyone who might know Jamie was a cop. Even after he was processed in, Jenkins continued that review of every prisoner sentenced to Sing Sing. If the FBI had done their job, the only person here who knew Jamie's identity was the prison superintendent. Not even the other inmate, who was about to play a critical role in this crazy-ass plan, knew Jamie was a cop. David tipped his chin.
"Here come the king."
Tony Mancuso ambled from the far end of the yard and headed toward the table, where Nikki Nails, Polly Nuts, and Sammy Sneakers sat waiting. David snorted.
"Court's about to begin. Looks like."
So far, Jamie had only exchanged a few nods with Mancuso in passing. While he watched Mancuso, he ran down everything he knew about the man.
"Tony Mancuso,
mafia capo and only living son of Paola Mancuso, current head of the Mancuso crime family. 6 feet tall, brown eyes, brown hair, and 200 pounds of muscle. And, like Jamie, due to be released in 2 weeks. Unlike him, Mancuso had been in prison for 3 years on loan sharking and drug trafficking charges. Another inmate leaned his shoulder against a nearby tree, his hands shoved into his pockets. He didn't know the guy's name, but had caught glimpses of him around the cell block. To anyone else, the pose probably seemed relaxed, just another inmate enjoying his outdoor time in the yard. Not to Jamie. His muscles tightened as he followed the direction of the inmate's gaze. Mancuso. This could be the guy. To make it look good, he'd been kept in the dark about which inmate had been paid off to kickstart the next part of the FBI's plan. Thanks to a discreet head nod from the prison superintendent this morning, Jamie knew it would be today. When the inmate pushed from the tree, Jamie stiffened. With his hands still in the pockets of his jeans, the guy started walking in a direction that would cut Mancuso off before he made it to his throne at the other table.
"Think I'll take a loop around the yard."
Jamie stood, hoping David would sit tight, which he did. The inmate's pace quickened, as did Jamie's pulse. This was it. Had to be.
"Tony!"
the guy called out. Mancuso stopped and turned. The other man caught up to Mancuso, engaging him in conversation Jamie couldn't hear. Keeping his eyes on the inmate's hands, which were still in his pockets, Jamie walked faster, but not too fast. He was 20 feet away and closing in. He'd pick up his pace, but with Mancuso's crew watching, he couldn't take the chance of making it look like this was pre-planned. It had to appear as if he just happened to be in the right place at the right time. Mancuso glowered and took a step back. The inmate pulled his hands from his pockets. Something shiny glittered in one of his hands. A shank. Probably a fork, or a spoon, or some other piece of metal filed to a sharp point.
"Go fuck yourself!"
Mancuso spat on the inmate's shoes and turned to walk away. The guy grabbed Mancuso's arm, jerking him around. He raised his other arm, readying to plunge the shank into Mancuso's chest. Jamie was still 10 feet away. If he didn't intervene in time, 6 months of prison would go down the drain, and Mancuso might very well die in prison, inadvertently courtesy of the FBI.
"Hey!"
Jamie shouted, sprinting toward them. The inmate jerked his head around, the shank poised in midair. Jamie plowed into the man. They hit the ground hard, knocking the breath from Jamie's lungs. He gasped for air, willing them to refill faster. The inmate raised his arm, about to plunge the shank into Jamie's chest. He grabbed the guy's wrist, holding the shank above him, its pointed tip gleaming in the midday sun. All around him, people shouted. Feet pounded as guards came running. Jamie had a good 50 pounds on the inmate, but he was scrappy, slippery with sweat, and Jamie lost his hold on the guy's wrist. The man's arm whipped down. Sharp, stinging pain speared into Jamie's left side. The inmate was on top of him now, straddling his chest and preparing to stick him again. Jamie slammed his fist upward, directly under the guy's chin, rocking his head back and disorienting him enough for Jamie to shove him away. On his knees now, he plowed his fist one more time into the inmate's jaw. The guy fell face down on the grass and didn't move. The shank, a sharpened spoon, lay a few inches away, its tip covered in blood. His blood. The FBI's carefully orchestrated plan had turned into a shit show. Guards surrounded them, pushing back other inmates who'd gathered around to witness the latest prison fight. Pain spiked Jamie's side, and with every breath he took, radiated down to his hip and up to his chest. Through the pain-filled haze now clouding his vision, he saw a 20 change hands. The fight had lasted only seconds. That hadn't stopped the other inmates from placing bets. Guards made quick work of collecting the bloody shank and cuffing the other inmate. Breathing hard and not wanting to give the guards a reason to hit him with one of their batons, Jamie remained where he was, on his knees, holding his hand to his bleeding side.
Every breath he took brought with it more stabbing, burning pain, as if someone had jammed a hot poker into his flesh. Christ, he was only 34, but he was too damned old for this. "Santoro, can you walk?" one of the guards asked over the squawk of radios.
"Yeah,"
he answered, regardless of whether that was true. His once white t-shirt was soaked with blood, and with every shift of his body, the red stain spread outward from the penetrating wound.
"Come on, boys,"
a voice, not belonging to one of the guards, ordered.
"Let's get him up."
Mancuso and Polynuts helped Jamie to his feet. The second he was upright, an even sharper twinge jabbed at his gut. He hissed in a breath. Getting stuck like a pig hadn't been part of the plan.
"Step back," a guard shouted. "We've got him."
With their arms looped around Jamie's back, they walked him inside the prison and up to the medical unit. 3 hours later, Jamie limped into the mess hall and lined up to eat another bowl of slop that tasted like cardboard and Elmer's glue and looked suspiciously like dog vomit. Yet another aspect of the prison system's master plan. If the food sucked that badly, maybe ex-cons would work harder at going straight. The prison doc had cleaned and stitched up his wound, then given him antibiotics and a tetanus shot. The superintendent, Sean Capra, had stuck his head in the medical unit long enough to discreetly inform him the inmate who'd shanked him had been sent down to the box, a small locked cell where he'd spend 23 hours a day for at least the next week. Standard punishment for getting caught with a shank or a razor. Capra had also notified Special Agent Jenkins of what had gone down in the yard. Jamie got his food and headed to his assigned table. Footsteps sounded closely behind him. Too close. He gripped the tray tighter, preparing to ram it in the neck of whoever was creeping up on his six.
"Relax, kid,"
a gruff voice said. Jamie twisted his neck enough to identify the man, Sammy Sneakers.
"Tony Mancuso would like a word."
Sammy tipped his head to where Mancuso sat at a table. The chairs on either side of him were empty. Jamie and Mancuso weren't assigned to the same chow time, meaning someone had paid off the guards to let him into the mess hall while Jamie was there. Even in a maximum security prison, where inmates' lives were totally controlled, some held a certain amount of power, influence, and authority. Mancuso was one of the biggest shot callers in Sing Sing. With Sammy following, Jamie went to Mancuso's table, noting the guards didn't make any attempt to stop him.
"Have a seat."
Mancuso pushed his tray of food away and rested his forearm on the table. Jamie set down his tray, then pulled out a chair and sat, grimacing when the movement pulled at his sutures.
"You beckoned?"
he said, with an intentionally distinct edge of sarcasm. Acting like a wimp in front of a mafia capo wouldn't earn him any brownie points. Sammy sat in the vacant chair on Mancuso's other side. Mancuso snorted, his upper lip curving into an arrogant grin.
"You've got balls. I'll give you that."
Jamie didn't flinch beneath the intensity of Mancuso's dark stare.
"Right now, all my balls want to do is be left alone to eat dinner."
Ignoring Jamie's irritation, Mancuso pointed a finger at him.
"You stuck your neck out for me big time, Santoro. Why?"
Defending him had been the plan all along, but getting shanked in the process might have earned him an entire tray of brownie points he hadn't figured on. Still, he had to play this cool. The bait had been dangled. Now the shark was circling the hook, eyeing it suspiciously and trying to determine if it was worth grabbing. Jamie shrugged.
"Seemed like the thing to do at the time."
He glanced down at his injured side.
"Now I'm not so sure." "You saved my life."
Mancuso thrust out his big, beefy hand.
"I owe you a solid."
Not wanting to seem too eager, Jamie looked at Mancuso's outstretched hand but didn't take it right away. After a long moment, he took the other man's hand and shook.
"I hear you're getting out in a couple of weeks,"
Mancuso said, and Jamie gave a brief nod.
"So am I. You got work waiting for you?"
Jamie made a disgusted sound.
"Lost my job the second I got locked up.
Mancuso nodded.
Figured that. When you get out, look me up. I'll get you some work. I could use a guy who knows how to use his fists. Jimmy the Fist Santoro. Has a nice ring to it, don't you think?
What kind of work? Jamie asked. Mancuso shrugged.
I'm in the garbage business.
A euphemism for organized crime.
Seriously, look me up when you get sprung.
For a long moment, Jamie locked gazes with him.
I'll think about it.
Mancuso leaned in.
When you're done thinking, come find me.
Where?
Jamie asked. In truth, he knew exactly where Mancuso would go. To Upper Nyack, New York. To the pricey home where his mother, Paola Mancuso, the infamous godmother, lived.
Nyack, ask for me at Bianco's Bistro. If I'm not there, they'll let me know you're looking for me.
Mancuso sat back and grinned.
Now, let's enjoy this fine meal and give thanks that soon we'll be dining on my cousin's fine Italian cuisine with a kick-ass bottle of Chianti.
Mancuso and Sammy Sneakers dug into their food as if it were a gourmet meal. Jamie pretended to do the same. Inside, all he could think was that the shark had swallowed the bait.
Game on.
Chapter 2. 4 weeks later. Bella shoved a hand through her hair, wishing the day were already over. The Thursday lunch rush at Bianco's Bistro was a madhouse. Customers' voices carried on the air, punctuated by laughter and the occasional clinking glasses. The Baccarini minuet played softly in the background. Behind her, Lou called out,
"Tomato caprese up! Linguini with clams up!"
People loved watching Lou through the big kitchen window. The smells of garlic and basil wafted into the dining room as one of the temp waitresses carried trays of plated food past the bar. Bella's mouth watered. In the interest of losing a few pounds, the only thing she'd eaten today was a small baggie of baby carrot sticks. So unsatisfying. Her empty stomach took that moment to protest loudly, gurgling enough to make her cringe and pray no one heard the noise that sounded like a tiny dog growling. Womankind is not meant to live on rabbit food. Owning an Italian restaurant, not helping. Like, seriously not helping. Bella poured glasses of Chianti and set them on the bar. Her regular bartender had banged out for the next couple of weeks to help care for his father, who'd fallen and broken his hip. Sierra, another waitress and Bella's best friend, set down her empty tray and began transferring the glasses of Chianti Bella had put there. Three more house Chianti, two Pinot Grigio, and Tony wants another bottle of that Pierazzoli Chianti Montalbano Reserva. Of course he does. Considering the Pierazzoli was one of the priciest bottles the bistro offered. Sighing, Bella grabbed another bottle from the locked cooler behind the bar, where the finer wines she'd handpicked on her last trip to Italy were stored. Where Tony and Paola were concerned, she didn't bother hiding her sarcasm from Sierra and her husband, Lou. They were the only ones she could safely voice her concerns to without fear of retribution. Paola and Tony might be her blood, but for all they really cared about her, she might as well be an orphan. As she cut off the wrapper, Bella glared at the corner table in the back of the dining room, where Tony and his crew enjoyed yet another meal on the house. Since getting released from prison, her cousin had been dining at the bistro nearly every day and sucking down so many bottles of her best wine, she'd lost count. In her mind, all she saw were dollars flying out the window.
"You're happy he's finally out, though, aren't you?" Sierra asked.
Tony caught her gaze and held it for a moment before winking. Bella sighed again as she twisted in the corkscrew.
"Of course I am."
She really had missed him. If nothing else, he was a bridge between her and her aunt. Years ago, she and Paola had been close. When Bella's parents had died, Paola had stepped in as Bella's mother. Now that she fully understood who and what Paola was, their relationship had become strained. She pulled the cork from the bottle with a loud pop and set it on Sierra's tray.
"There you go. More profit down the drain."
Cheer up. At least we're still in the black.
Sierra hefted the tray and headed for Tony's table.
Right, Bella whispered to herself. In the black.
But was that because of the restaurant she'd created? Or was it due to her aunt's mystical reputation as the godmother? Once the rumors had taken hold, Paola had become a celebrity, much like John Gotti, attracting people who sucked up to her to the point where they looked ready to get down on one knee and kiss that enormous Gotti ring she wore. Bella picked up a cloth and began wiping down the bar. A customer at the far end, a man with slightly curly reddish-brown hair, held up his empty beer glass. She pulled a clean glass from beneath the bar and flipped down the beer tap. While the glass filled, she looked around the dining room and couldn't help but smile. The bistro was hectic, loud, and downright insane at times, but she, not her aunt, had created it, designing every single component from the ground up, including the elegant menu. A faux paint treatment made the walls look like aged ochre-colored plaster. Tables with white cloths and red napkins were crammed closely together on a classic black and white checkerboard tile floor. For two of the walls, she'd commissioned a local artist to paint Italian landscapes with bright red poppies and sunflowers for vivid pops of color. The back wall was original exposed brick, against which stood stately wood and wrought iron wine racks, along with the small oak bar. To give the bistro a luxurious atmosphere, she'd sewn heavy red velvet drapery to flank the entry and kitchen doors. Strategically placed reproduction iron streetlights arched over the tables. An occasional ficus tree provided a bit of privacy, and several devil's vines that had grown to more than 20 feet long had been hooked here and there on the ceiling and walls. The overall look was not only bright and cheery, but gave the bistro an outdoor feel she'd been striving for. The bistro was beautiful, and it was hers, at least partly. She was the one who'd studied hard at culinary school in Italy. She was the one who, along with Lou, created the ever-changing menus using fresh, locally sourced produce and other products. And she was the one who'd put her heart and soul into the bistro, hired the staff, managed the place 6 days a week. Still, it wasn't hers. Not solely, anyway. What had Paola ever contributed? Money. When the bistro's primo location in Nyack had come up for sale, Bella was short the funds to buy it. Now that she had enough saved to buy out her aunt, Paola kept refusing to sign over her share like she'd once promised. Beer spilled over the rim of the glass, dripping everywhere and creating a wet mess. Like my life. She poured off the excess, then wiped the glass dry. She delivered the beer to the customer, then grabbed a dry rag to clean up the mess she'd made. Raised voices came from a table Sierra waited on. The group of suits from one of the local banks was getting more unruly and louder with each glass of wine they pounded down. The customer was always right. Well, most of the time. She wasn't against cutting them off, but alcohol wasn't their only problem. They were obnoxious, entitled guys who enjoyed throwing their weight around, even at the expense of the waitresses. Sierra's lips twisted into a frown, and she stepped back from the table. Or tried to. One of the men put his arm around her waist, preventing her from escaping. Bella threw down the rag. This was fixing to be one of the moments when the customer wasn't always right. She headed for the rowdy table when the front door opened. A man stood on the threshold, his intense gaze scanning the dining room. The guy was tall, really tall, with only a few inches between the top of his head and the door casing. Broad shoulders nearly filled the rest of the doorway. Thick, dark brown hair hung to just below his ears, and a short, slightly pointed beard graced his chin. Satan was the name that came to mind. The urge to touch such a handsome face warred with her instinct to keep a healthy distance from that kind of brutal masculinity. Completely absorbed in eyeing the man, Bella practically slammed into a ficus. "Let me go!" Sierra gritted out, trying to extricate herself from Mr. Smarmy's tight arm around her waist. When Smarmy's wandering hand slid to Sierra's ass,
Bella was ready to slam a tray over the guy's head. Okay, hot stuff. None too gently, she grabbed Smarmy's fingers and yanked them away. I think that's enough sleazy groping for one day, don't you? Smarmy's brows lowered. What little she could still see of his eyes was shooting sparks. She'd embarrassed him in front of his friends. Tough. Smarmy remained seated, but turned to face her.
We were just getting to know each other, weren't we, sweetheart?
He grinned at Sierra, an arrogant smile that made Bella want to scrape it off with a cheese grater. Sierra backed farther away and gave a quick shake of her head to confirm she wanted nothing to do with this guy. Not that Bella needed confirmation. It wasn't the first time a customer had hit too hard on one of her staff. Sadly, it wouldn't be the last. My waitress disagrees, she shot back with a patently false smile of her own. So how about you all finish up the rest of your meal quietly? And while you're at it, keep your hands off my employees, or I'll cut them off and shove them down your throat. Yeah, too bad she couldn't say that. That was more Tony style.
Whatever happened to Italian hospitality?
Smarmy's words slurred. It went down the toilet when you assaulted my waitress. From the corner of her eye, she caught Tony and his crew eyeing the situation, ready to leap to her aid if necessary. One of the busboys had stopped to listen in, also watching, in case things went completely down the crapper. Conversation in the restaurant had quieted as other customers watched. Now, if you apologize to my waitress, then sit back down and enjoy the rest of your meal quietly. I'll comp you all dessert and coffee. Smarmy crossed his arms.
I think you should comp our entire meal. Knock it off, Sean, one of Smarmy's friends whispered.
I'm so curious, I have to ask. Given your sex offender behavior, why would I do that? A guy like this had to have a string of women he'd assaulted in his past. Sean stood, towering over her 5'3" frame.
To reimburse my friends and I for your rudeness.
I don't think so, she chuckled. If you're going to behave like an animal, then you can eat like one. She grabbed Sean's plate of linguine with clam sauce and set it on the floor at his feet.
Buon appetito.
One of Sean's friends snorted. The other laughed outright. Sean curled his fists.
Why, you little bitch.
Think carefully before you finish that sentence.
A calm, deeply menacing voice interrupted. Not Tony. Not any of his crew. The man who'd just walked into the bistro, Satan, stood a few inches behind her. She'd never really thought of brown eyes as having a piercing effect. His not only did, but they radiated a lethal intensity, like he was itching for a fight. Waves of power mingled with obvious irritation, judging by the firm set of his jaw and the way his nostrils flared, poured from his huge body. And yeah, it was huge. Bella had thought that sleazeball Sean towered over her, but this stranger had several inches on him and about 30 pounds more muscle straining against the fabric of his black short-sleeve Henley. She'd never seen such bulging biceps and forearms before. And what was that cologne? Whatever it was, she could take a bath in it. It smelled so darned good.
Everything okay here, cuz?
Tony had sauntered over with one of his men, Marco Iannetti, backing him up.
You know this is Paola Mancuso's place,
a woman at one of the adjacent tables whispered to her date.
They call her the godmother.
Bella fisted her hands, resisting the urge to scream at the moniker thrown around the bistro at least once a week. It always made her feel as if people came here because of Paola, not for the great food, friendly service, and warm atmosphere.
Well, the deep voice said from behind her. What's it gonna be, fellas?
Yeah, I think we'll be going. One of Sean's friends stood, then fished out his wallet and dropped a wad of cash on the table. From the size of it, enough to cover all three of the men's meals, plus a hefty tip Sierra deserved. Sean was practically dragged from the bistro, barely sidestepping the plate of linguine.
You'll be hearing from my lawyer,
he shouted over his shoulder.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?